Countering domestic terrorism with counter-programming online. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Amy Scott, in for Molly Wood. Earlier this month, the White House released its first ever strategy to fight domestic terrorism. The plan includes more funding for investigators and prosecutors, better information sharing between agencies, and efforts to address the underlying causes of violent extremism, such as racism and bigotry. Tech has a role to play. The Biden administration says it will invest in programs to increase digital literacy and work with tech companies to make it harder for terrorists to recruit online. Heidi Byrick is co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. I asked her what we know about how to prevent extremist ideas from spreading online.
Yeah, well, we know for sure one thing works, and that is basically deplatforming hate group material from major tech platforms. There's ample evidence that this drives down the number of recruits, shrinks the amount of propaganda, and that's not just about white supremacists. That's also true of ISIS, for example, and Al-Qaeda, who have been massively deplatformed over the years. We have some evidence on click-through rates of people looking at videos that warn them about the dangers of these movements. There are also what they call redirect programs where you might be searching for something about white supremacy and material comes up about maybe mental health issues or other things that are kind of a path to get you away from, for example, something that glorifies Hitler.
And what do you think the click-through rates do tell us? Do we know that people follow, say, the mental health link?
We know that people click to it. We have very little evidence of what happens after that point, which is really the most important point, right? Do they engage with a mental health professional? Do they get help? If they watch a video about the horrors of white supremacy, does that actually change their opinions? This is the kind of data that we need to make sure that these programs are successful.
And what could the government do to help with that?
Well, I think it's very important, and some of this has already started, is for the government to make funding available to civil society organizations to start experimenting in this space.
I imagine government involvement is risky, though, in terms of people's perceptions. Say a counter-programming video that has a government stamp might be seen as propaganda.
There is no question. And there have been failed propaganda projects by the government many times. I mean, certainly during the Cold War. But we've also seen it in the fight against ISIS. And actually, the FBI not too long ago put out, you know, I hate to say this because I have a lot of friends in the FBI, but a terrible website called Don't Be a Puppet, which was to stop young people from being radicalized. And it was completely not evidence-based and basically ridiculous. So you don't either want the heavy hand of government and just pure propaganda. You want facts. And you also need to have people who are informed in psychology to make stuff like this successful.
Is there anything we can learn from how other countries approach this?
We have a lot to learn from our allies. For example, Germany for decades, Sweden as well, have had exit programs to help get people out of extremist movements of all kinds, including things like neo-Nazism. They do a lot of work with youth to try to blunt these problems. And they've been more direct about defending democracy from white supremacy and similar threats. These are all things that the United States could learn from. And actually, in Biden's recent, you know, strategy document about combating domestic terrorism, there's a lot of talk about learning from allies. So I hope that that's exactly what happens.
The report from the White House or the strategy talks about addressing the causes of extremism, among them systemic racism. But there is this fight right now over whether we can even teach about that in our schools. What can law enforcement really do about the kind of underlying causes?
Yeah, this is a complicated thing in this debate over critical race theory, I think, is very unfortunate because at the root of the problem of white supremacy is not really understanding the history of racism and the impact of racism in this country. I mean, obviously, we wouldn't have this movement if we didn't still have deep strains of racism in the country. But now when it comes to law enforcement, one, we need to use them to stop the most terrifying parts of this threat, hate crimes, for example, domestic terrorism. But we've also got to reform the relationship between law enforcement and communities. you know, it would be nice to have law enforcement take hate crimes seriously in many parts of this country, which they don't, which would strengthen those bonds and also ultimately, you know, hopefully lead to a reduction in the racism that's propelling all of this.
Why do you think the U.S. is so far behind in recognizing the threat of domestic terrorism and of white supremacist extremists?
Well, I mean, frankly, this has been a political failure of administrations of both parties. After 9/11, our entire apparatus of government, the entire FBI, intelligence services, domestic, international, shifted their entire focus to Islamic extremism. It was as though they'd forgotten that Timothy McVeigh had blown up the Oklahoma City federal building just a few years before, in 1995. And all the way until 2014, very late in the Obama administration, there was really no emphasis on this threat. As it was growing, as more people were being killed by white supremacists, I mean, there were serious failures of government to stand up and pay attention and realize this wasn't an issue of sort of one kind of terrorism only being our focus. It was an issue of and frankly, we should have known better. So now the problem is just much worse than it was even 10 years ago.
Heidi Beirich is co-founder of the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism. The nonprofit group works to expose and counter racism, bigotry, and prejudice. And now for some related links. We've got more on that disastrous Don't Be a Puppet campaign Beirich was talking about. The interactive website was meant to teach teenagers how to recognize violent extremist messaging and avoid being drawn in by it. But as Lori Goodstein reported in the New York Times back in 2015, civil rights and religious leaders objected to its focus on Islamic extremism and worried it would lead to bullying of Arab and Muslim students and hinder free speech. The site is no longer active. What about a tech solution to countering hate speech online? MIT Technology Review reported on a new study that finds AI isn't there yet. Scientists tested a number of, quote, state-of-the-art systems for detecting hate speech, and none of them cut it. Some scenarios that tripped up the AI moderators: the use of profanity in otherwise innocuous statements, slurs that have been reclaimed by the targeted group, and references to hate speech that are actually meant to counter it. And if the Biden administration wants tech companies to do more to stem extremism, it's going to have to talk to Alphabet's YouTube. Earlier this year, USA Today reported on a study by the Anti-Defamation League, which found that even after being pressured to take down extremist content, YouTube was still recommending white supremacist videos to viewers who had watched similar content. In response, YouTube said, quote, views this type of content get from recommendations has dropped by over 70% in the U.S. YouTube did not apparently tell USA Today 70% from what. We've got the links at marketplacetech.org. I'm Amy Scott, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.